From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a deeper dive into stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today On Deadline is turning our eyes to the South, where millions along the Gulf and East Coast, and even inland, are continuing to recover from the mass amounts of destruction caused by Hurricane Helene. In what's being called one of the deadliest hurricanes to hit the U.S. mainland in the past 50 years, Helene had claimed the lives of over 100 people as of Monday. Many expected that number to continue to climb as rescue efforts got underway. Deaths are being reported in at least six states in the South. North Carolina had the highest fatalities as of the time of this recording. Other states to suffer casualties due to the hurricane included Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Virginia. Devastating footage has captured businesses and homes fully submerged in water, roads and bridges wiped away by rising waters, and popular towns like Asheville, North Carolina, completely cut off from the rest of the country due to lack of access. On Sunday, after the storm had mostly passed, around 760,000 homes were left without power in South Carolina, while more than 1.2 million were in the dark in Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, and Virginia. Rescue and recovery efforts were launched in the hours after the storm passed, but they're expected to continue as the path of damage leaves many in dire situations. Residents in Georgia were frustrated by the state's response to the storm. Responders were left overwhelmed by the sheer volume of communities affected. To share more on efforts to help those impacted by the storm, Steve Tybor from New York-based 8 Days of Hope joined Odyssey.
Of course, in the aftermath of Hurricane Helene, we thought about 8 Days of Hope and what you might be up to, what you might be planning, and then over the weekend, kind of getting an idea of the scope of damage. When we first talked with you last week, we were thinking, okay, Florida, helping out with this flooding, that's where you'd be headed. But now this damage is so extensive. What are you looking at this morning?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me this morning. You know, we've been doing this now. This is our 20th year that we've helped out families in the aftermath of disasters. And probably the thing that I would say about this hurricane and the thing that I'll remember years from now is the depthness of this hurricane. So usually when a storm of this size hits the coast, probably within the first, 150, 200 miles, you know, you have some serious challenges. We immediately deployed our mass feeding unit to Perry, Florida. We were there a year ago. It was the same path as Hurricane Idalia. And we start making thousands and thousands and thousands of meals, handing them out to people and families who had no power, always serving the food to local churches. But then, of course, as more knowledge came to us and we saw the depthness of the storm, yesterday we very quickly decided to deploy to a second area of the country. And today our leaders are setting up camp in Valdosta, Georgia. And so to be in two different states because of a storm is a little bit unique. I think we've done that one other time. But as this morning starts, we are now looking at a third place, Asheville, North Carolina as well. So the need is great. The damage is very widespread. You have flooding damage. Of course, you have the extensive wind damage. But we're talking about tens of thousands of families needing assistance.
Wow, three places, though. That is incredible. What about your resources? That's really got to be tapped. What can Western New York do for you?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. We've been blessed. You know, over the years, we have had some amazing partners and donors. And so we have about $6.5 million of equipment, from feeding trailers, shower trailers, of course, trucks to take trees off people's roofs, bobcats, bucket trucks. Interesting enough is when you have the flooding that you've seen in North Carolina and Georgia, laundromats. So someone's home floods and their washer and dryer, of course, is damaged and needs to be replaced. But all the laundromats, they as well flooded. And so we have two laundry trailers that are going to be deployed to two different cities to give people the dignity of just having clean clothes. So if people want to get involved, they go to our website, 8daysofhope.com. They can volunteer. It's free. We provide food and lodging. You just have to get there. You do need to be 16 years of age, so there is an age requirement on this arm of the ministry. But again, we will be in Florida for at least another 2-3 days. We plan to be in Georgia for over 2 weeks, and then we'll see where we land in North Carolina.
some of the damage? I mean, it really varies between heavy water damage to what you would see with, you know, winds and destruction from that. I guess, how do you take and assess this when you're going to locations where you might be dealing with very different things? It's not like it's all flooding and everybody knows what to do and getting rid of the water and helping get rid of mold and things like that, but you have flooding and then you have some other things. How do you manage all that at once?
Each family that we serve, we have a leader. We have 271 volunteer leaders all across the country and 60,000 volunteers in our database. And so many of them have been trained on how to do and exactly how to do it, how to do the project. And so it is very important when you have this much flooding and so many homes that brought water into their house because the roof got damaged or a tree fell in their house, it's very important that in the next 3 to 7 days we find a way to remove everything that got wet inside their house. And that is more than just going in and we call it gutting or mucking out a house. So we have muck out kits. So a team of 10 go to a house, they find out where the water line is, they pop a line a foot on top of it and start taking out the drywall, the flooring, the furniture, cabinets. But that can be very, very disheartening for the families we serve. So we always tell the volunteers, you know, be careful. Some of these things were keepsakes given down from a family member, and some things, you know, have a special meaning. So don't rush just to get the job done. Make sure that you're aware of the emotional needs of the families we're serving as well. So we'll be tarping roofs, doing chainsaw work, mucking out homes. Of course, we're continuing to feed families in Florida. I think today we're expecting to do another 2,000 to 4,000 meals, and we're going to be there as long as needed.
The country's attention initially focused on Florida, where Helene made landfall, several other states were hit just as hard, if not harder, by the storm. Some of the affected communities aren't even near the coast. That shows just how large Helene's path of destruction was. For example, Asheville in North Carolina is 300 miles away from the nearest coastline. There, roads and bridges were washed away, and water rose to rooftops in some places. ABC's Jim Ryan offered more on the storm's destructive path on Monday.
Well, the storm damage, it's so widespread. I mean, a lot of times we're focusing just on where it hit the land. And, you know, obviously there was a massive storm surge in Florida. But, you know, many states are getting in on the devastation this time. I mean, it's wild to think of just how big that path is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think perhaps people in Western North Carolina, of all places, thought we're not going to have any effect from that. Sure, it may come up here and bring us some rain. Well, you know, Helene was still a tropical storm when it struck that part of the country, moved up through Georgia, through the Carolinas, and into Tennessee, and it has dumped untold amounts of rain. The storm itself now, Brian, has moved offshore as a post-tropical cyclone. It's simply a low pressure area out there now, but it's still causing some rain today in Virginia and the possibility of flooding there.
Is part of the reason that we're seeing so many fatalities, such you know, really devastation in that sense north of Florida, because of maybe a false sense of security? Were they not really thinking, okay, hurricane, it's going to hit Florida, we know we're going to get some bad weather, but they might not have thought it would have been that severe?
Yeah, I think that's probably it. That, okay, it's a Gulf storm. It's going to stay in the Gulf of Mexico. Landfall will come somewhere in Florida, and they'll probably feel it there and up into Georgia. But I think you're right that people living that far inland, Tennessee, western North Carolina, they thought there's no way it's going to impact us. Well, it certainly has in a historic way.
Yeah, I think they did think it was going to weaken, and it didn't. Power outages, gas shortages, cell phone service, all of those are pretty critical right now, right?
They are. About 2 million homes and businesses are without electricity right now. That's from Florida all the way up to Ohio. About 31,000 power outages in Ohio, of all places, in the southern part of the state, directly affected by Helene as it was moving through that area. They're working quickly to get the power restored. And again, Florida, where the storm made landfall, 131,000 homes and businesses have no power there. But go up into Georgia, half a million, more than half a million. The Carolinas have even more than that. So, yeah, it's. I think people around the country should take heed that even if a storm is striking off the Atlantic coast or striking in the Gulf or even in the Pacific, that there could be impacts deep into the interior.
Following Helene and other hurricanes this year, many have been wondering if wild, damaging, and sudden storms are becoming the new normal. Should people in wide swaths of the country brace for a dangerously new way of life? After all, numerous tornadoes struck Chicago this spring. New York and Philly and California and countless places in between have been hit with wild weather. Barry Keim, a Louisiana state climatologist, joined Odyssey to share what we can expect from hurricane seasons moving forward.
Yeah, well, you know, they told us it was going to be a crazy season, and for a while there it was looking like maybe not so much, but here we go. Things are getting crazy quickly, and you really got a feel for those folks who live pretty much anywhere in Florida because they're about to have to deal from one end to the other of the Florida Peninsula and the vast majority of the Big Bend into the Panhandle with at least some impacts from this hurricane, aren't they?
Yeah, oh, exactly. And what's really interesting is this part of Florida, the Big Bend area of Florida, historically has not been hit very often by major hurricanes. But just in the last few years, you know, we've had Michael and Idalia and now Helene. So it's been a bad run in a very short period of time for that neck of the woods, for sure.
You know, yesterday at this time, I think Helene was not even a tropical storm yet or had just become a tropical storm. So we're talking about just this crazy quick development from nothing. And, you know, just 3 days ago, there was literally nothing there to now it could be a Category 4 major hurricane making landfall this afternoon. This new era of rapid intensification makes it very difficult to prepare for, plan for, and react to storms, doesn't it?
Yeah, that makes these kinds of storms, that much more dangerous. But just let me emphasize and punctuate how great the forecasting has been for this storm. I mean, the mere fact that they predicted this even before there was really anything even going on in the Northwest Caribbean was just phenomenal. I mean, they did that days ahead of time, and they pinpointed pretty much where this thing was going to head. I mean, the cone is pretty wide, with a 5-6-7 day forecast, but nevertheless, I would say the forecasting on this particular storm has been absolutely unbelievably good.
Even before the Hurricane Center was issuing potential tropical cyclone warnings, we were seeing the computer models and the forecasting software really highlighting this area and really saying, hey, it looks like this is what's going to happen. That's got to be encouraging for the evolution of the technology.
Absolutely. And now keep in mind, they don't always do this good, but it just so happens they really nailed this one. And I think it's getting better and better as we, as we go through time. So you hit on a couple of factors. Now, why are we having these rapidly intensifying storms? Well, to define rapidly intensifying, that's a storm that increases its sustained winds by 35 miles per hour in a 24-hour period. And for that to happen, you really need, all the worst-case variables to come together. You need very warm sea surface temperatures, very high humidity. Those two kind of go hand in hand. And then you need very low wind shear in the upper air. You need favorable upper air to allow the storms to vent. And all those conditions are in place. I mean, we have near record sea surface temperatures in the Gulf. We had it last year and this year. We're in a La Nina, which creates this very low wind shear environment. And again, so all the pieces are right there in place, and these things just seem to be blossoming. And what another problem, and you hit on this earlier with some of your opening statements, is that these storms seem to be rapidly intensifying close to land, not so much out over the deep water, but as they get closer to land, and is giving the inhabitants, society, very little time to adapt and adjust to these storms when they actually do, blossom right before landfall into a major hurricane. I will say, though, that, the folks in Florida have gotten, I don't want to say ample warning, but, I mean, they kind of knew this was coming several days ago. But, again, you watch these things and forecasts are historically bad 4 or 5 days in advance. So you just kind of wait it out, and then all of a sudden you got a major hurricane bearing down on you.
Yeah, and I think
that's what's happening today.
Of course, you can't control the weather, but there are proactive things you can do in any part of the country to get through ever more intense storms. And preparation is key. Here are some starters. Get the right auto and home insurance for your area. Make a storm kit with lanterns and batteries, a radio, and non-perishables. Know the safest spot in your house and the highest place where you can leave your car. Most importantly, stay abreast of forecasts and evacuate when the experts tell you to do so. And make sure your friends and family who need assistance get out of the path too. This recent storm brought a pretty chilling illustration of why we're telling you all this. Emergency preparedness experts in Florida went so far as to warn people who refused to evacuate the Helene landfall zone to write their names and social security numbers on their arms and permanent marker. That was so their bodies would eventually be easier to identify. But every storm brings tales of people who try to stay put, even with warnings like that. And those stories often don't end well. So do yourself and first responders a favor and heed the word of professionals. The physical and emotional toll that storms like Helene take on lives and properties and livelihoods is incalculable. And that leaves many of us hungry to help. If you're one of those people, know that there are many reputable agencies on the ground helping to get people back on their feet. A few include the Salvation Army, the American Red Cross, and the United Way. All of those are accepting donations on their official websites. This show is produced by Joe Heady, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline. Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.